Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America. This is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese. Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Oh, a happy, happy Monday to you beautiful people. A third consecutive victory Monday for Nebraska football. We are here talking about it for the next 3 hours, 93.7 Ticket and theticketfm.com. That and many other things going on across the wide, wide world of football. I'm Austin Orman. To my left in studio, your right if you're watching on stream, Husker Hall of Famer Jay Foreman. Jay, Huskers are 3-0. Big weekend coming up. Vibes are high. How was the grilling this weekend?
The grilling was a minimal this weekend, but
bummer.
You know, I mean, what is Houston Christian's name? What are they, the Hawks or
Huskies?
Something? Huskies. They got grilled. Sure, and it was hotter than Hades out there too. But it was a good weekend. I mean, obviously it was a Nebraska weekend, set off by the football team or the volleyball team. Football team back to volleyball team, and then Bud Crawford did what he does best and put all heads to bed.
We will talk about Bud Crawford coming up here in just a little bit. Really cool moment for him, for his family, obviously for the entire state of Nebraska, right? With what he was able to do. We'll talk about that a little bit more coming up. A couple head coaches already got fired over the weekend. We'll try to wrap our heads around that. Take a look at the AP poll, its most recent top 25, little NFL look into Michigan and Arch Manning and more all coming up here on the show. 402-464-5685. If you want to be a part of things, would love to hear from you. First question that we have for you: what grade would you give Nebraska football for its performance throughout the non-conference? Jay, we'll open this up to you first. Three games for Nebraska, 3-0 overall. If you had to assign a letter grade to how the team has played so far, where would you put Nebraska at?
I mean, they've done everything they needed to do. They're 3-0. So, I mean, are you talking about like style points? I mean,
however you grade it.
Yeah. I mean, I think
open interpretation.
B plus. I mean, I could give you an A, you know, or whatever. So, I mean, they've done everything they've needed to do. So, I mean, I guess you know, it's an A to me. You know, I'm about wins and losses. Everybody else is, you know, kind of is in the, like how it looks and all that. You really can't judge off the last 2 weeks, and definitely like last week it was like, okay, we're on the cusp of the national championship, but I definitely think they got better at things throughout the first three weeks, excuse me. And so, you know, I'll just say B plus, because I mean, A would be, you know, number one in the nation, but that's, you know, peach fuzz here.
Did Nebraska play better against Akron or Houston Christian?
I'll just say Houston Christian because they scored on defense and you know, that's always
brings a small tear to Jay's eye.
I mean, I think both of them, they did what I think I think they played, you know, good in both. You know, there's probably some things they probably need to improve on. I'm sure that the coaches know more than I do, but they showed that they were able to go out there and consistently blow two inferior teams out, and that's what you should do. You should be, you know, handling your business with your starters, and then allow your rotational players, backup players, and potential, you know, guys that have walked on and might not play for the rest of the season, allow them to get some valuable reps, because that'll not only improve your depth, but the guys that are, let's just say, that always are your practice squad guys. You know, this is something that can, you know, obviously, you know, give them a spark in practice. Now, obviously, they should always approach practice as, you know, a game, but, you know, you don't want to ever get it to the point where, you know, these kids probably thought, okay, we'll get in this game, and then they don't, or it doesn't work out. So, you know, I think it, you know, overall, it probably served its purpose.
Were you surprised at all that Nebraska didn't send its starters out there on either side of the ball in the second half? Not even for a single drive against Houston Christian? They did against Akron. They didn't this last week. Were you surprised by that?
Not really. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I would have pulled them. I mean, that game was over second quarter, but, you know, you had to play them to halftime. I like it. Just, what's the point? What are you going to do?
I was almost expecting them to come out for one drive just because they did it against Akron, and also because of the way the first half ended. We saw Matt Rhule be really aggressive in terms of using his timeouts, trying to get one more possession. It didn't go so well.
Yeah.
Right. 2 minute stuff doesn't go that well. So I almost wondered if we were going to see the starters come back out, treat that first possession they got like a 2 minute drive, and then be done. But obviously, no major bones to pick with them not being out there, and great reps for the twos and eventually the threes and the fours for the majority of that fourth quarter.
No, I wouldn't. I mean, what are you going to do? Come back out, warm back up, and get a 2 minute. I mean, you had your 2 minute. I mean, I think you could look at it that, you know, it's a good coaching point. This is what we're doing well. This is what we didn't do well. This is what we were set out to do, you know, in this situation. Explain to, in this case, the offense, or I guess the whole team. Yeah, this is what I'm trying to do, or was trying to do. This is where we got, and this we did what we didn't do well, and then just kind of go from there. But, you know, I think everything that they needed to do accomplished, and of course, you know, how it turned out wasn't ideal, but I mean, I think if you come back out in the second half, I think you defeat the purpose. It gives these guys that are at halftime, you know, you can make your assessment adjustments with the guys that were in there, and then you immediately turn to the guys that are going to start the second half. It's a good way to see how those guys can prepare for a game starting in the third quarter, your backups and your rotational players. So, you know, right now, you know, everything that they've done, you know, hopefully leads up to a good performance, you know, against Michigan. So they got to, I mean, this is it, you know, not this is it, but this is going to be.
But it is an inflection point in the season already.
Well, it's going to be the best team they play.
Yeah.
I don't think Michigan is very good.
Mm.
So, you know, you're going to play against guys that'll bite back. They're going to come, you know, Michigan doesn't have the same edge that they've had, or, you know, had in the past, obviously. And, you know, you lose your head coach, you lose coordinators, you lose your weight coach, you know, which is a pretty much, you know, if it goes your head coach, the coordinators, your weight coach is the next most important. And then he's right up in the mix of that top, you know, two or three. And then obviously with all the turmoil that they had around the program and still do, obviously in this early part of the season, there's definitely, you know, blood in the water, but, you know, to be honest with you, Michigan's at the same point as Nebraska was when Nebraska, you know, I'm trying to think who was like, okay, say like, can't really say Bo, you know, because he always won nine games, say like Riley, you know, after the first year or so. And then obviously for us, where it's like, nobody cares that Michigan's, you know, not as good as they had been.
Maybe like 2002 Nebraska.
Yeah. Well, whatever it is, mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. You're still beating Michigan.
Yeah.
You know, that when you go back and look how you'll play against ranked teams, they're not going to be like, oh, well, you beat a ranked Michigan team, but, you know, they're not going to have a long paragraph. You know, right. Oh, this is 2 years after Harbaugh went to the NFL and so-and-so went and all this and other stuff. And they're just going to look at you beat Michigan and they were ranked. So this is a great opportunity on like every single front. It doesn't mean that all the problems are solved, but it's saying that, you know what, you're the better team. You get, there's not really a lot of excuses because we get them in the right time. We're playing them at the right time, kind of like Colorado last year. We were able to play them early. We play them at an optimal time. You know, I'm gonna put that in
as optimal time as you could ask for. If there's not even a great time to play a team like that,
well, you know, I'm soft air quoting because you should. It shouldn't matter what time you play, but
sure.
The early game stuff is out. Playing them in the middle of the day, so
middle of the day, middle of the season. Right.
First quarter of the season, and they aren't, you know, obviously with a freshman quarterback, they aren't hitting on all cylinders, so it's a great time to play them.
We'll definitely keep talking about Michigan as we go throughout the show and obviously the course of the week. I do want to hit on some Nebraska stuff just through the non-conference, Jay. The pleasant surprises. What do you think Nebraska has done well so far through three games that look like it could be a building block for the Huskers as they turn the page into Big Ten play?
Well, I think, you know, offensively, I think it was as encouraging. Obviously, Emmitt's been very consistent, you know, and Dylan as well. But I think, you know, as far as the passing attack, I think it's like been each game has been a guy, which is great. So that means you can't really focus on one. I think the equal opportunity, spreading the ball around and having different body types, I think was on display. So you're starting to see, you know, I guess their identity. You know, it's probably a lot clearer. You're going to take what the defense gives you, and they're going to, you know, try to pound the ball up front if they can. And so, you know, and then also the biggest thing I think is, you know, the improvement and the depth of at all the positions, right? So that's been something that they've been building towards. And obviously in the first 3 years or first 2 years of recruiting and developing, and you're starting to see it. So that's the – I wouldn't say it's a surprise, but that's it's good to see.
It's on track. Yeah. At the very least.
Yeah, maybe ticket. In some cases ahead of track with some players.
Who are some of those guys that come to mind you think about maybe ahead
of track?
I mean,
when you think of like, Quinn Clark, the younger, you know, I guess triplets, or you couldn't say triplets, it was quadruplets or whatever you want to call it, whatever four means, or whatever four is, quartet, I think. What is it, Jones, Clark, Smith, and Mills.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you throw Mosey in there as well. So you got five guys. So Mills, Mosey, and Clark. Jones are all freshmen.
Yeah.
They're true freshmen. I mean, that's essentially, they are just barely off been here. And then two redshirt freshmen. So you're looking at the depth is there. And I wouldn't say there are surprises, but I think the rapid development of them is, you got to give them credit. I mean, Coach Shorts done a good job, and those guys have been able to come in and embrace the challenge.
Between those guys, Cortez Mills, 5 catches, 118 yards, the long 62-yard touchdown. Isaiah Mosey has rushed once from -2 yards, but has 7 catches for 93 yards, done some damage in the return game as well. Clint Clark, of course, had his first touchdown a couple weeks ago. Haven't seen a lot of Jeremiah Jones, 1 catch for 6 yards for him, but again, that's another guy that's gotten on the field. And Keelan Smith, 1 catch for 15 yards. None of those guys look out of place. They all look like they belong on the field. And that's even after you get...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNC's apply in-app only.
Get past the two transfer additions that Nebraska brought in Dane Key and Isaiah Hunter, who have both come in and made an impact in their own way. Ja'Cory Barney Jr. has been solid, I think, through the first three games. When I think about the offense, Jay, one of those kind of positive, I don't want to say surprises, but developments, has been Luke Lindenmeyer. Yeah. That's a guy that I was a little concerned about the uptick in volume and everything Nebraska was potentially going to ask him to do. He's looked the part, he's acted the part, he's played the part. Nebraska's in a lot of 11 personnel. He's on the field a lot. At least it seems like it from where I've been sitting. Dana Holgorsen clearly trusts him. Matt Rhule has had a lot to say about him. I was not necessarily skeptical. I thought he could be on the field and not get played off the field.
Yeah.
But I think he's turned into a legitimate piece for this Nebraska offense. I've been really impressed with him through three games.
Yeah, he's had a good year. I mean, obviously things have been, you know, working well in his favor on and off the field. But I thought he was, you know, good last year. I think, you know, Illinois, Dylan tried to hit him on that, you know, kind of a deep over route, just over, you know, a little bit overthrow, and everybody's like, why throw to him? All right, you know, obviously, you know, seeing he's got, you know, athletic ability, and he's shown the ability to catch, and you know, I think he did a lot of the dirty work in, you know, in years past, and he worked his way up through the ranks too. I think he came on as a walk-on. You know, remember when Jeff Sims was the quarterback up in Colorado, he was the primary move guy, but he was probably their best inline blocker and willing blocker. So that lets you know he was embracing a new challenge just in order to get on the field. So then he started to develop as a receiver and allowed Nebraska to lean on him. And I think he plays his, I'll just say, sneaky outlet role pretty well. I mean, you know what I mean? And, you know, look, the more you can do, the more guys that you have that can make plays when called upon, either as a complimentary piece to, let's just say, Dylan, Emmett, Dane Key, Barney, and a Hunter. And then you start to get into Lindemeyer and you know, let's just say you stop at, you know, Lindemeyer, and then you just say Quinn Clark, Mills, and just stop there. That, I mean, now you got five legit receivers, and then if you can get some, make some hay out of Heinrich Harburg and Carter Nelson, then it's like, okay, now we see, you know, what the depth is, and everybody's going to go out there and try to eat. So, you know, I think the biggest thing that they've been able to do is hold serve, you know, go to Kansas City, squeak out a victory, and then, you know, come home and, you know, like I said, hold serve and, you know, score a lot of points, and something that's, you know, really good for, you know, the I guess the morale or whatever, but, you know, that's great. And then now you know, you're going into Big Ten play. Things are going to get tighter. Now you got to really focus, and it's for real. I mean, I can't explain to you the difference of, I mean, I know what it's like when you go from preseason to the regular season. I'd probably say that's where they're at right now as far as, you know, an NFL analogy. Mm-hmm. They just played preseason, right? And the first preseason game is always kind of the roughest, you know, just kind of, you know, getting your vibe back. And now you're going to get into the real deal. And it starts, right, like there is no warming up to this type of intensity or this type of you know, competition.
You don't walk in ready to go. It's going to be too late early. And that's not the way you want to start out. I'm going to get to the text line a little bit here. Eric says, Jacory Barney Jr. needs to stop taking big hits. Seems like it's at least once a game. Obviously got folded in half against Cincinnati on the first play. It does seem like he's gotten hit pretty hard. He's still not the biggest guy in the world. Seems like maybe there's a little bit of the Taylor Martinez effect where he's not necessarily comfortable lowering his shoulder into contact. He's going to stand up and try to make the next guy miss. And if the guy doesn't miss, they're going to get a pretty good hit on him. I want to see a little bit more from Jacory Barney Jr., Jay. The stats are pretty good. Number of catches, he leads the team in with 15 of them. He's second in yards behind Dane Key. And then have they not given him a rushing attempt? They've all been the little tap passes, none of the sweeps or anything. I keep waiting for Jacory Barney to hit that small sliver of a crease between a couple of blocks to get through. It seems like he's one tackle, one you know, shoelace away from having a couple bigger plays. I'd also like to see him just put his head down and go a little bit. No, he's not huge, but I do think some of that, I've noticed kind of what Eric's saying, even if you're going to get hit, you know, put your own shoulder down and don't get walloped, because it does seem like it happens once a game.
Yeah, I mean, I think Cincinnati was a little bit better than maybe people projected. I mean, I think the way that they play that Big 12, you know, where they kind of play a zone and they got, you know, the two outside guys were pretty athletic, and then their two inside guys were bigger, but they could run a little bit. And then you had like Antoine Peake Jr., who, you know, could do, you know, he could really, you know, close. And when you're trying to make a big play, sometimes you can expose yourselves to what looks like a big hit. You know, I think he's also, one thing I've remember is kind of like wiry strong. They look skinny. It's kind of like Devontae Smith with the Eagles. They look they look scrawny, but they are hard to get a, even when you get a good hit on them, it's not solid, you know, and
not going to keep them down.
Yeah, and they're weird. They're so small, like you can't really, you know, kill them. So, and he's a tough kid, and
it's Miami in him.
Yeah, and you know, and you know, he plays, you know plays hard, and so he's probably just learning when to try to make a guy miss, and that's just come from you know, more reps and studying tape and knowing who you're going against, and then know when to kind of, all right, you know, get down and not take an unnecessary hit. There is a kind of catch 22 there when you think about that.
There sure is. I will say this. I think Dylan Raiola's done a better job of not necessarily giving Jacory Barney Jr. the hospital balls that Adrian Martinez gave Wandale Robinson at times. Yeah. Wandale got stood up and popped a number of times over the middle, whether he was playing in the slot or playing running back. So I think there is, you know, hope for Jacory Barney Jr. on that front. Meal Ticket Jay says, fewer major penalties that are drive killers have been big for Nebraska so far this year. Does seem like, you know, outside of the Elijah Pritchett false start on the one, there haven't been many of those penalties that set Nebraska back, A, or B, that Nebraska hasn't been able to overcome yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, you know, it's, you know, Coach Rule and staff have put an emphasis on it, and they probably, you know, they've been talking, I mean, he talked about it, I think, maybe the first year. And so that's a process that you got to kind of, you know, nurture day in and day out, and it's something that just because you did it in game, in this case, game three, that means you got to still use, you know, view it as game one. You know, it's every week. Penalties don't, you know, essentially I call it don't punch yourself in the face when you're going into, a prize fight. And so, and then also I think that the players embracing it too and knowing it's a point of emphasis. And I think they see, they should see the benefit of it. You know, if you're an offense, you don't want to give the ball away. The more times that you don't give the ball away to another team or allow the other team to gain and flip the field via you, your own personal doing, right? It's like false starts, you know, legal formation or unnecessary roughness or too much, you know, when you celebrate it or taunting or whatever, then the game becomes a lot easier. And you still have the same amount of fun as long as you play with the same with intent and intensity. So, you know, that's got to be, you know, it's going to, you know, penalties and field position is going to be a big factor. You got to expect that you're going to be, you know, you're going to get Michigan's best effort. So you got to prepare to give them your best effort and just have the confidence that your best effort or, you play as good as you can. It will be better than anything that Michigan can do.
Last thing for me on offense is TJ Latifi's come in, looked very in control of the show. I think all Husker fans have been really impressed with the true freshman coming in from Orange Lutheran out of California.
You know, anytime your quarterback hits, and it's no different, I don't mean to cut you off, Austin, but anytime your quarterback hits, you got a good class, just like with Dylan. You know, TJ Latif, you know, still coming to Nebraska, even though Dylan's here, showed you a little, you know, intestinal fortitude. And he obviously has lived up to the billing of his, you know, high school rankings, and he can only get better, too.
On defense, I'll ask you about the linebackers first. Are they ready for what they're going to face against Michigan? Have you seen enough that tells you, yep, these are Big Ten caliber linebackers ready to make plays?
Yeah, I think they've gotten better. It was good to see Watson Trent, you know, be very active because I know he's been wanting to do it and he just haven't had really a lot of opportunities. And Vincent Shavers is going to be able to, you know, bring the funk a little bit. And Javen's been in Big Ten action, you know, for years. And then you got the young pup in Dawson Merritt, where he showed that, you know, the ability to play big. And so I think the linebackers will go out there, you know, and play well. And, as long as they go out there and understand that, you know, this is going to be a football game. You know, this is a game where you can't say, okay, I just did my job. If I'm setting the edge, I got to destroy the edge. And then I got to go make football plays because that's what Michigan is going to do. You know, they're going to test your manhood a little bit, and that's fine. And then you just got to, you got to see how much they want to play, because they're going to see how much you want to play. But I think you can test them real early. But you got to go, it's going to be, you got to play and compete four quarters.
I've been really impressed with the secondary. We thought it would be good coming into the year with all the guys they brought back. But, Jay, they haven't allowed 70 passing yards in the game.
Yeah.
That's insane.
I mean, it's all about who you play.
It is. But yeah. Cincinnati's put up legit passing numbers the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's Akron. Yeah, it's Houston Christian. I get it. But still, I mean, in this day and age of football it's hard to give up fewer than 100 passing yards. Sierra Wright has been good. Matt Rule talked about him moving inside to play some nickel with Malcolm Hartog out. Donnie Jones, they've been impressed with. Andrew Marshall got a shout out. Jameer Khan got a little bit of a shout out. And then Matt Rhule is really complimentary of his safeties and Deshaun Singleton and Marquise Buford and what they've done. I mean, allowing less than 200 passing yards through three games is a feat no matter how you're playing. I knew the secondary would be good. I didn't realize it would be this good for Nebraska this early on.
Well, they've done what they're supposed to do. I think Sierra Wright, when he stepped in, I think USC was his first start. I don't want to, you know, whatever it was.
Officially, yeah, it was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, he was a late ad. You know, we'll keep talking about it. He was late ad last year, I think in June, right? It was super late.
It was late,
you know?
Yeah.
But one thing that's about him, number one, he's a good kid. He's a solid kid, tough kid. He's competitive, though. Like, there's guys that say they compete, he competes. So that right there, that you're in this day and age, you're four steps ahead right there, right? Mm-hmm. He's a competitor. He got good energy. And then you bring in Marshall, who primarily they were thinking about it. It looked like it was like to be the return guy, because that's where he, you know, I think where he came from. It was Idaho or Montana?
Idaho.
Yep. Where he, you know, he had like two or three returns. And, you know, mm-hmm. of course he could play corner. But when you see him, he's a smooth operator and very, you know, he's steady. And I think he's probably, I wouldn't say he's a little bit better than what they thought, but I think they've been, you know, pleasantly, you know, pleased with being, you may be surprised with how good he is out there in a corner. So now you got two guys there, right? And then you got the three guys, you know, in the back that seem like they played with each other forever. And they can kind of, you know, erase some stuff. And for the most part, they've tackled better this year mm-hmm. than last year, right? I think the lanes aren't as big, so that lets me know the defense is playing better. Well, then you throw in Jones, right, who mm-hmm. got his chance in the bowl game, and he's a bigger corner and he can play slot. You've seen him make plays in the run game, kind of make plays in the, I call it the extended run game, when they throw those little like flares or, you know, slot screens. And then you got Khan, and then you've seen what's the little dude that came from Colorado?
Guthrie. Yeah. He's Nebraska's second leading tackler.
I was gonna say Gaither, but I know it was Guthrie, right? Mm-hmm. You're pleasantly surprised by again another freshman.
I'm proud of you for pausing to get the name right, not just going for it. That's growth, Jay.
Yeah,
I'm proud of you.
I mean, it's
way to go.
I don't take it that serious. I mean, people still come up to me asking if I'm related to George Foreman. You know what I'm saying? Seriously.
George Foreman wishes.
Yeah, no, I wish. I mean, I'd be paid. I'd be living in Houston, and I probably name? My name would be George.
George Jr.
Something with George. I'd be like the eighth.
Well, if you're in Houston, it'd be Jorge.
Hey, come out there with the Mariachi band, like my boy Bud. But I think they've done whatever they needed to do, and now they got to continue to. You know, the one thing is, like, when you're out there and you kind of put yourself out there, you're going to get everybody's best shot. So now you got to just bring it on.
We'll get to some more texts during break, see if we want to get to those. If not, we will come back and we'll talk about a couple head coaches already getting early
on. UCLA, man, they did my boy wrong, man.
Or did they do that. Was it self-preservation? Man. Well, we'll talk about that and more when we get back to old school.
Back to old school with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
We're back here on old school 93.7 Ticket, ticketfm.com, brought to you by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese, special ingredient butcher shop, three Lincoln locations, and one up in Omaha. So, Jay, Deshaun Foster got done dirty. Martin Jarman at UCLA mistreated him? What's going on?
I don't think it's like mistreat, but I mean, well, first of all, Chip left when he left, and that's his choice, and that's fine. You know, and he left, I think, a lot because of lack of recruiting budget and support, right? Mm-hmm. So he goes into the offensive coordinator. Great move for him.
Well, and they also said they were going to fire him if he didn't beat USC. They beat USC and said, I'm going to leave before.
Yeah, the next year. And there was, he was feeling a little heat, but I think he could have called their bluff and been fine. And, you know, they obviously had recruited and developed decently enough, as we saw on display last against us, right? And, you know, maybe, you know, it's better to leave before you get fired or whatever Chip was doing. But he's a, you know, Deshaun's a late hire. He's a position coach, never been a head coach. Mm-hmm. Chip didn't have him as associate head coach prior, so I'm assuming he wasn't maybe in those, like, in those meetings. Well, of course he's going to take the job. It'd be no different, you know. And then, so that whole year is gone. So, you know, the portal opens when Chip leaves. Who knows what happens after that? And then you're essentially playing catch up. Won 4 of the last 6 games last year. And then here you are. Yeah, you get Nico, but you lost 3 guys on defense. Drafted tight end, NFL talent. So 4 or 5 guys off that team that are NFL talent. And your senior quarterback that started to really play well. And you're kind of like, I don't even know if you want to call him a wing back, running back. He was gone. And you lost Eric Bieniemy, who was probably your confidant as far as keeping the culture, credibility as offensive play calling. So all that stuff is gone. Just like that. Now you're trying to reset, re-recruit, develop, and then now you're in the Big Ten. 3 games into the season, yeah, I know that you paid New Mexico that type of $1.2 million to come in and play. But even if Chip Kelly's there, you could have lost to New Mexico.
Way that roster's looking
now,
right now?
Now, the way that they played, you know, with Nico and you go what they played Utah. Utah's obviously a legit team. Their quarterback is good. You knew there was going to be some transition, and then all of a sudden you can them after 3 games. You were literally set up to fail. Now, being set up to fail, and he's probably got some buyout and all that, but it's still his alma mater, and he wanted to see this thing and do it right. I just thought it was an awful early time to pull the plug on a young coach. And maybe it's things that, you know, you could say clock management and all that, right? They even get on Bill Belichick about clock management.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been coaching probably longer than I've been on the earth. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They get on Nick Saban about clock management. They get on Kirby Smart.
1 second ticks by that the fans don't like, you are right. Hearing about
they're on Shane Steichen of trying to play for a 60-yard field goal. Now, it worked out for him, but these are professional coaches. So nobody's oblivious to clock management and all that crap. You know, it happens. And that's probably
it's the biggest critique of Andy Reid.
For real. So, I mean, heck, even Deion had one in the first game against Georgia Tech or maybe whatever the game, whatever it was, and so forth and so on. And then you pull the plug on him, and maybe you just lost all faith in him. But if you lost all faith in him by game 14, you never had faith in him in game 1. Sure, you know, he's going to be compensated and stuff like that. I just felt like it was just a way. It was not the probably best way. I just felt it was way too quick.
So I guess what's the bigger sin? Hiring him in the first place or firing him this early? Given UCLA specifically. I mean, like you said, they hired him late just because of how everything went down.
I think UCLA. Well, I think firing him that quickly. You hired him. I mean, he has qualities to be a good head coach. He's obviously can lead. You know, obviously he knows the landscape. He's from Cali. You know, he knows all that stuff. So he has all the qualities to do it. And he's a great person, you know, in and out of the office. He's a great person. He was a great teammate, a great pro. He's tough. So all the qualities that you need, you know, from a, you know, coach, you know, he has it. Now, you could say, okay, well, is he ready for that position? Then you say, okay, well, you should have never hired him in the first place, but you did hire him. So it lets me know you weren't supporting him. So after the season, you know, Bieniemy's going. Then you're like, all right, dude, you need to get you a veteran associate head coach that can really plug all the holes because our roster is depleted.
And maybe you don't have those connections, but we will help you find
it. Right. Or assist you into it or very, very push you towards it or at least have some check marks to. I doubt that he went into the season saying, okay, if you lose in New Mexico, you're going to get fired. Because he would have done the same thing Chip Kelly's doing. This is a pattern with UCLA. Yeah. They don't have support from their donors or whatever it is. They don't put a lot of support or even thought into their football team. Now, they're probably a little jealous that USC finally has, it looks like they have their ducks in a row. And now you're like, okay, look at Lincoln Riley. You know what it is. Now it's like, okay, well, this is the coach they got. Look at our coach. You think you're, I mean, who are you going to really go get unless you're going to get another coach is going to get his first time coaching experience.
Cough, cough, Tony White, cough, cough.
You might. you know, why, I mean, he played there, you know, why wouldn't he? He's done some good things. He's been up for jobs. You know, I'm sure they've, you know, got him on a short list.
Here's the list from The Athletic. Bunch of interesting names. Right. D'Anton Lynn, right across town.
Yeah.
Dan Mullen.
Yeah.
Jonathan Smith, Pasadena native.
From Michigan,
Michigan State.
He ain't leaving. Why?
Ryan Silverfield from Memphis.
Mm.
Clark Lee at Vandy, but that's his alma mater. Jed Fish says key people at UCLA like Fish.
A lot of people like Jed. People.
He was their OC and interim head coach in 2017.
Yeah.
Kalani Sitake, BYU.
Mm.
Matt Campbell, PJ Fleck, Will Stein, Nate Shiohas, and they finally get to Tony White.
Yeah. Well, PJ Fleck's name been associated with that job like 85 times.
Uh-huh.
But it hasn't happened.
Probably won't happen.
I would find it's just it wouldn't see. I don't know where, if it would be an upgrade. I don't know. I mean, unless they get something like Cignetti, where like we hire you, we're gonna pay you, we're gonna double our NIL for the next 3-4 years.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna upgrade some facility. Whatever they're gonna do, then. But I think Tony White would be a good fit there. I think he has head coaching qualities.
But would they support him? You know, that's what it comes down to. Would he get the resources? Would he get the investment? Well, sure. Who does he bring in around?
I don't think he would take the job considering what happened to Deshaun Foster. And, but you know what happens is that they like, oh, we hired one. We hear it around here. We hired a Nebraska guy. We can't do it again.
Right.
This is the dumbest thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you hire another, then you don't hire a Nebraska guy. And then that didn't work out. We got to hire a Nebraska guy. Why don't you just
hire the right guy?
Yeah. Why don't you just stop trying to like talk yourself in and out of stuff, and then stop trying to find reasons why not to hire Nebraska people when actually people can do the job, and guys that can come here that aren't part of Nebraska can do the job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think sometimes that just gets lost. Like, that's not first on the docket to talk about. Just do the job.
1508. UCLA is clearly a little brother to USC, has to compete with a lot of pro teams for support. It might be a bottom five power four conference job for football. That agree or disagree?
Because of how they act. Lack of support.
But is that UCLA's fault?
Yeah.
Or
it's been their fault.
So you're saying that they should be better and they're allowing it to be this bad.
They should be way better.
So it shouldn't be a bottom five job.
It should not, but it is.
They've turned it into one.
Yeah. Okay. It's slowly but surely. It's like a bad gig, like you know, lactose intolerant. Boy, that rumble starts to become an action.
Rumble.
They're in full red alert on the porcelain throne. So, I mean, there's all that list there. All of them can do the job. I hate it for, you know, like say like Tony White, say Florida State continues along the path that they're having. The main reason they won't hire Tony White because he's never been a head coach. This is the, here, I'm going to just get on a little thing, right? Like a little soapbox. I don't want to say hate, because that's obviously what the whole climate of hate is, obviously not the word. What really ticks me off is when you hear people and they say, especially about when, like, say, like Nebraska hires a coach or doesn't, or they already, like, they hire a coach, then they already, like, try to set the path that he's not going to be successful. Well, you're like, oh, he's never coached before, or you've never done this before. Well, there's a first time, like you don't, like they say, oh, he doesn't have experience. Well, how the hell do you get experience? What do you do? I mean, do you just go to experience school and then come back?
It's like the entry level jobs that you need 3 years of experience to get.
Right. It's like, you know, your education, your resume is based on whether, you know, if you're in this case, Deshaun Foster and Tony White, you played on the field and you've coached. But more importantly, are you a good person? Are you a good coach?
Mm-hmm.
Then you start to kind of go from there. And sure, being a head coach is a lot more difficult now because you're running a corporation and all that. And so you got to have a good support staff around you. But it'll be interesting to say, because as much as you say that, you know, you don't, a first time head coach can't do it. You have with like the older, like Mullen and Campbell, would he fit out in California? You know, like that you say that. Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, what can he do? Like, can he really recruit California? Then that's what they're going to say. Whereas, like, guys like Tony White and has been out there, Jed Fish, they kind of know how to maybe navigate that UCLA system a little bit better than everybody else.
Would you rather have a guy that's already failed somewhere else or a guy that hasn't failed yet as a head coach? you know, that's a Dan Mullen sort of retread, right? Who's had some decent success. I mean, the on-field was less the problem at Florida. It was more his general disposition toward recruiting than anything. Well, I mean, you know, same kind of thing with Joe Moorhead, Mississippi State.
People can change. And, you know, look, there's the old saying, look, coaches get hired to get fired. I mean, I remember Jerry Burns telling me that, you know, when I'd walk around and hang out with him, I was a ball boy, and that was way back in the day. So, you know, as long as you kind of learn from your, I don't ever say, you know, like from your mistakes, but what kind of stopped you from being successful, that's the best way you see it. Bill Belichick was fired, okay? By measurement, I guess measurements, he failed at Cleveland. By measurements, right?
Mm-hmm. Nick Saban was fired.
Nick Saban was fired. He failed. Well, I don't know. I think he just left the Dolphins, but technically
was going to be, but
he failed at the Dolphins. And now look at them, the two of the best in their own, college and obviously in the pros. And so I think you guys just got to hire the right person that's going to be, you know, looking at UCLA that they're trying to build it. You got to have the same buy-in from the AD. And then the powers that be as well. I think it's a harder job than at UCLA now that they're in the Big Ten versus when they're in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it became like extremely, not extremely hard, but.
But when your competition is, you know, not to throw anyone under the bus, but Washington State, Oregon State, current version of Stanford, Cal, you can pick up a few wins a year.
Oh,
just like that. In the Pac-12, oh, yeah, right? As opposed to, you have to go all the way across the country to play on a Friday night at Rutgers and here comes Penn State to town, and Oregon's still around, so you didn't get a chance to duck them by chance. Washington's better.
Yeah, it's tougher. And it's a different brand of football, mm-hmm. so it takes you a little while to kind of get your roster reset, which is, you know, also a problem. Is like you know, did they not know that they have a Pac-12 roster more than anybody have a Pac-12 roster?
And USC is not far behind on that front.
No, but they're just making it work. But Lincoln Riley's been there longer.
Yeah.
And he's been actively trying to fix that.
Sure.
And he's done a good, you know, they've done it, you know, and they've kind of changed the way they do their offseason program, so forth and so on. And Sean Foster just got there and then now he's gone. I mean, it's sure, he probably could have done a better job. Could they have supported him better? Sure. You know, it goes both ways.
Let's go ahead and take a break here. We will talk about the other head coach firing, this time out on the East Coast. Virginia Tech fires Brent Pry. What does that mean for the Hokies? What are the directions they could go? And $50 for Grotta up for grabs for you. Get ready to play some trivia for $50 to Grotta Bar and Lounge when we get back to old school.
Back to old school with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Wrapping up hour one of old school here at 93.7 Ticket, ticketfm.com. Austin Norman and Jay Foreman with you. Everyone's favorite question to ask is, what's for dinner? The easy answer is Grotta Bar and Lounge, located in the Clock Tower Shopping Center at 70th and A. Grotta Bar and Lounge features a menu full of delicious options, ranging from unique menu items like the peanut butter burger or the wizard pastrami sandwich to plenty more traditional items as well. They also have daily specials and incredible drink options. Visit Grotta Bar and Lounge today at 70th and A. I can personally attest to Grotta. It's become a fast favorite for a post-church brunch spot for me and my family. We were just there yesterday as well. Great service, great food, great people. Grotta Bar and Lounge, Clock Tower Shopping Plaza at 70th and A. All right, for $50 to Grotta, how many times has Virginia Tech finished the season ranked in the AP Top 25 since Frank Beamer left after the 2015 season? Texter number two with the right answer. How many times has Virginia Tech finished the year ranked since Frank Beamer's tenure at Virginia Tech ended in 2015? Gets $50 to Grotta Bar and Lounge. That's the question, Jay, because Brent Pry gone after going 16-24 in four seasons, three and change seasons, I should say, in charge of Virginia Tech Hokies program. His tenure started in a bad way. It ended in the same way. Losses to Old Dominion, 45-26, after getting blown out in the second half by Vanderbilt last week. How similar or different are the Virginia Tech and UCLA firings?
Significantly different, because I think that, Deshaun Foster just got there. Not granted, you could probably just, if you look at the snapshot of losing it to Old Dominion in New Mexico, it's right on par. But I think Virginia Tech, at least in the preseason, from all the big name guys that you see on the different networks, was a team that was mentioned to be up there with Clemson, and Virginia Tech was a dark horse for the college football playoffs. So obviously they did not reach anything close to the standard expectations, what was perceived to be coming out of Blacksburg. So I think Pry is, I think he was a unique hire when he was hired. I think it was a hard, wouldn't say a hard job afterwards, but I think, he's a defensive guy, mm-hmm. Bud Foster,
Who was back on staff as an analyst.
Right. But, that he had a big stronghold on that team, with Beamer and, mm-hmm. Not really being, up for the job. I mean, it's tough. I mean, I think Virginia Tech is somewhat like Nebraska. I think there's a certain way they need to play. I think there's a plethora of talent in and around that area. I think they started to lose some recruits to Old Dominion. You heard about that, or they didn't recruit guys that went to Old Dominion and came back to bite them in the butt. And we heard about that the first time Old Dominion beat them. Then they amped up their recruiting. Mm-hmm. I know that as a fact, because Pearson Prelue, who was a former teammate of mine, one of the solidest dudes out there, is on their staff and he's helping. No prior coaching experience, just to let you know. No, just playing.
Got the experience somewhere.
Yeah. He got a lot of them at the highest level. And him and Andre Davis, who's another former teammate of mine.
Did he have any experience?
No, but Andre is helping like with alumni and stuff like that, but he also helps on the coaching as well.
Gotcha.
So they really went in on it. I think their offense was anemic, probably the nicest way to say it. Needed some iron.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was on a very, very short leash. And I think that leash got shorter based on the preseason hype. Now, the preseason hype was based on Florida State not being what they were. They're okay with Miami being what they were. They assumed Clemson would be Clemson.
Mm-hmm. You assume SMU and Louisville are
just
half step worse and you can catch them.
You can catch them. Mm-hmm. You had a good schedule.
Carolina, who knows? Duke, probably not the same.
And you had a good, you felt like a schedule. Mm-hmm. You probably didn't really think Miami would be this good. And then Georgia Tech. And then mm-hmm. it's like everything's just blown up.
The new ACC dark horse is Cal, by the way.
Yo.
Watch out. I told you the Gophers had to watch out, Chet.
I tried to warn you. I expected the Gophers to do it, turn it on. They showed glimpse. I think it was that travel out there, man. I played out. Cal is a different place to play. Mm. It's a weird kind of campus. It's a bunch of smart kids, but at night they get turned up. I call them prison stadiums when they're like below ground level.
Oh, yeah. They dig them into the ground instead of up above. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Reminds me of the longest yard.
Dang.
Cal's good, man. I mean,
they're solid.
Mm-hmm. They lost Hunter. They lost the quarterback, and they're still kicking. They're still
freshman's balling.
But thank you for not bringing back Hunter, and their mm-hmm. quarterback is doing well. It looks like right now in Indiana, and they're tough.
D-Train, you are the winner of the $50 to Grotta Bar and Lounge. Two times since Frank Beamer left, Virginia Tech has finished the year ranked in the final AP poll, the postseason.
I was going to say poll. One.
It was two. It was the first 2 years of Justin Fuente. They went 10-4, played for the ACC championship in 2016, have not been back since. 9-4 with a Camping World Bowl loss, and then a 6-7, 8-5, 5-6, and 5-5 for Justin Fuente.
You know me and Justin Fuente got a connection.
So I've been told. Let's go to break. We'll be back. More college football, NFL talk, an hour or two of old school.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Pro Savings Days are back at Lowe's. My Lowe's Pro Rewards members save even more with limited-time doorbuster deals. Save $5 on 24-count Contractor's Choice 42-gallon trash bags, now just $14.78. Plus, get your choice select DeWalt Elite Series saw blades for $9.98. Not a Pro Rewards member? Join for free today at Lowe's. Valid through 9/17. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.